You are listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. This week, TWC's Peace Talk.
TWC's mission in the region is to provide safe, empowering services for families experiencing domestic or sexual violence. We seek to promote violence-free communities through culturally appropriate outreach programs and supportive services. The Peace Talk radio show is our opportunity to let the region know what work we are doing and answer questions if people have them. Today's date is September 23rd, 2020. Some topics we're going to be talking about today are going to be on protection within self-care, some on balance, some effects of social media on people, and overview of the Healthy Mind Platter created by Dr. Daniel J. Siegel. We will have a guest speaker today, and her name is Shelley Andrews. She is the on-staff counselor here at TWC. Speaking now is myself, Michael Bialy. I'm the Outreach and Prevention Coordinator here at TWC. So welcome and thank you for joining us today on TWC's Peace Talk radio show. Just a heads up, this is a pre-recorded show, so if you do have any questions afterwards, more about TWC, go ahead and give us a call at any of our giving numbers. Our 24-hour crisis line is 907-543-3456. Again, our 24-hour crisis line, 907-543-3456. Our toll-free number, 1-800-478-7799. Again, that's 1-800-478-7799. And our Bethel local business line, 907-543-3444. Again, that is the Bethel Local Business Line, 543-3444. Now we're going to go into some announcements. Through the City of Bethel Cares money, which was passed through to BCSF, which was passed through to TWC, TWC is offering individual assistance for those who have experienced financial difficulty because of COVID-19. This might be because you had to quarantine after exposure and couldn't work from home, or if you were furloughed from your workplace. If you think you qualify, please go to TWC's website, www.tundrapeace.org. Again, that is tundrapeace.org. And go to the COVID-19 grants tab to either fill in an application online or print, fill out, and send to TWC. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. This year, due to the pandemic, we will be doing most of our activities digitally and online to be as safe and inclusive as possible. Make sure to like TWC's Facebook page, Tundra Women's Coalition. There will be a $1 a bag of stuff at TWC's thrift store on Saturday, October 3rd from 10 to 4. It will be a sidewalk sale if weather permits. If weather does not permit, it will be indoors. So if you do come and it is indoors, please bring a mask and attempt to socially distance. We will again host the Facebook Purple Guspa campaign. This campaign raises awareness for the important issues by showing that you are willing to join hands with others across Bethel, the state of Alaska, and the globe to eradicate domestic violence from our world. Purple signifies domestic violence awareness, and guspaks are a traditional clothing item worn by Yupik people in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. If you have a purple guspak and would like to show your support for domestic violence awareness, please find a background that represents something beautiful or life-giving to you and take a photo of yourself wearing your guspak with your hands outstretched to symbolize joining hands with all the other people who are working to bring an end to domestic violence in our region and our world. Please submit the photos to TWC at twcpeace.org. Again, that is TWC at symbol twcpeace.org or our Facebook page, and we will post a new photo each day during the month of October. TWC's Facebook page will host several peer-to-peer funding campaigns so we can continue to perform our life-saving services. TWC staff will distribute DVAM resources, Domestic Violence Awareness Month resources. A Snapchat filter will be available within the community of Bethel roughly the first week of October. There will be a media message from TWC's board and TWC's Teens Acting Against Violence, also known as TAV group, as a little PSA for everybody. For more information, you can reach us at any of our given contact numbers. So, in the previous show, we talked about self-care, peace of mind, and the different phases of healing. Also, as well, different tools we could use for self-care during the process of healing. Today, we have a special guest talking with us. She is the on-staff counselor here at Tundra Women's Coalition. Her name is Shelley Andrews, and some of our general topics will consist of protection within self-care, some self-reflection falling under self-care and reflecting with others, things you can do when realizing you need some positive changes, having a healthy routine within self-care, spirituality and examples of it, question on your role in life, having different perspectives, listening to and learning from constructive criticism and different points of view, identity of oneself, social media's effect on people, the chase for likes in relation to phase 3 of healing, redefining oneself, some examples Shelley uses for self-care, and finishing with the importance of balance. How you can work with the imbalance of feelings like discomfort to embrace the imbalance and learn from it and not spend too much time on it. Okay, so now we're going to get into the interview with Shelley Andrews.
You mentioned protection within self-care.
Right. So self-care has kind of become a pretty big buzzword. It is relatively new in the field, but it's now, I think, kind of more normalized. So the way looking at self-care, we need to kind of look at both sides of it. And one example we were talking about just before we got started was the yin and the yang, right? Mm. So the yin side of self-care, I think, is the more popularized version, in that it's we talk about being sort of gentle with ourselves, soothing, comforting. So an example of that might be taking a warm bath or a steam bath, having a hot cup of tea and holding it and drinking it slowly, maybe doing some deep breathing, meditating. So those are a common form of gentle self-care. But the flip side of that would be more like the yang side, in that it's more action oriented. We'd be thinking about protective factors. And by that, I mean setting limits. It might be a stern no. It might be asking for help. And then along with that is following through. So and it's more action-oriented, it's more us taking responsibility. So you need the yin side to kind of sit with yourself and allow things to be. Sometimes life is what it is, that cliche, but it's in order for us to feel how our body feels, know our thoughts, know our emotions, we have to sit and kind of quietly be, stop the chatter, stop the movement of the day, and sit. And then with that sitting, hopefully we're allowing a curiosity. Kind of the dangerous side would be the judgment side, where we're saying it's good or it's bad, or I need to stop this. Saying I need to stop this is actually a form of reflection. But if it's critical and judgmental, like I'm so dumb, why do I keep doing this? There's something wrong with me. That is not the path we're talking about. More like my body gets tense when I think about this situation, and my critical self-talk really starts getting strong. I want that to stop. And what do I need to protect myself from? And sometimes it's from others, but often it's from ourselves, because mm-hmm. self-care is often from within us. And so it's taking the time to feel the trigger or the imbalance, sitting with it, finding yourself calm, sort of regulating yourself, and then moving to what do I need? And how can I get those needs met? What's my responsibility to get those needs met? Because I'm responsible for me. I can't.
Mm-hmm. So. I have a question. Would self-reflection fall under self-care?
Yes.
Yes?
It's part. We have to take time, like I said, to kind of quiet the chatter. Reflection is a way, and it can be with yourself, but it's also helpful to reflect with other people mm-hmm. because they offer a lens of objectivity that we don't have.
Yeah, different perspective. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So self-reflection allows us, again, when we're quiet or sitting with somebody and attending to the issue, we kind of explore, how does that make me feel? Am I okay with that? Is mm-hmm. it good enough? Or is it something I want to shift in? When I face this, my body gets tense, or I jump for comfort food, or, you know, there might be other vices that we go to. Or is it like, that's an interesting feeling, but I'm okay with that. And that's a form of reflection. Mm-hmm. So once we kind of explore that, then we can, you know, sit with it and be, it's okay, it's good enough. Or maybe we need to do some action and move forward on that protective side.
Yeah. I guess once someone gets to that stage, what would be their next move from there after realizing that?
Well, you mean in terms of like realizing that you maybe need some more changes?
Would that be where you kind of reach out to support systems and services possibly?
It could be. It also could be you want to look at yourself. We're a whole person, so what are my emotional needs? What are my physical needs? And what are my kind of thinking and spiritual needs? So we need to kind of reflect on that. Mm-hmm. So after a day at work, I work at Tender Women's Coalition, so it's normal to have a certain level of stress. I've just taken on energy from the day in my service. That's not always a bad thing, but I do need the self-care to release that energy so I can be prepared for my home life. Mm-hmm. And that's a normal practice. That's just how it is. I don't need to reach out for that. I do need to get a routine for myself. Mm-hmm. And I have several of them that I use. And some of them I need more of, depending on the day.
Yeah.
So, but if I'm stuck in something, I'm in a particularly, whether it's a relationship or a situation in my life, and it becomes like a tape recorder of stress. So I'm in this hamster wheel where whenever I think about it, my body gets tight, my breathing gets shallow, I start sweating. Again, I might want to go into some of my vices. I can't sleep. Those are indicators that maybe I need to take some more action. And what's that action going to be? Is it saying, no, I'm not going to take on that new project, I have enough on my plate? Or is it where maybe I need to seek out some counseling and some support, or certainly a reflective friend that I can safely open up to? You know, and there is no end all be all. This is where sitting with yourself and finding out. So for me, walking is a huge self-care, walking on the tundra by myself with my dog. Mm-hmm. I do like walk and talks with friends because I enjoy walking. It's a different energy. A walk and talk is an exchange. It could be supportive. It could be me venting. Tundra walks, solo tundra walks are very meditative for me. I certainly tell the tundra my story, but often I'm just silent and taking it in, listening, smelling, and just being right in the moment. That doesn't work for everybody. Mm-hmm. So, you know, looking at like emotional self-care would be something like saying no, scheduling time for yourself. So it's one thing to say, I need some me time. It's another thing to schedule it. Mm-hmm. And that's the protective factor. I have a lot of difficulty with the amount of time that self-care takes. It can leave me with a sense of guilt. And that's a separate issue.
Yeah.
And that one needs a little deeper work. And I have certainly sat in the chair receiving therapy pertaining to that, with activation of guilt. So rewarding yourself for completing small tasks, seeking information, online tutorials, reading books, developing relaxing rituals. So self-care, it isn't a one-time you do it and then you're done. It's an ongoing practice, and that is easy to talk about and difficult to do. The other thing to be aware of is you're going to really be on and doing your self-care really well, and then you're going to fall down. And that's okay. There's not a judgment about that. Just notice, wow, I have not gone on a walk in a week. No wonder I'm crabby. Own that. And so what am I going to do about that? Well, it's raining out, so I need to do maybe some yoga or some kind of movement to alter that. And then what was getting in my way of my ritual? What was I allowing to sidetrack me? And just to, again, that kind of more yin side where you're sitting with it. The coloring, meditation, breathing, journaling, whether it's even doodling is a form of emotional self-care. People say, well, I'm just doodling. What we do know about doodling, pen to paper activates the higher part of your brain, and it releases an area where we can move into problem solving. So mm-hmm. things like doodling, drawing, sketching, and certainly writing, free-form writing, can often cleanse us of that cloud, where we then get to the, oh, okay, so that's what I want to do, or that's what I'm going to do. Then the physical is, again, movement that you're comfortable with. Some people are into the hardcore, you know, weightlifting, triathlon, wonderful. But if you like gentle stretches, again, gentle walks, but movement is important. We need to, and even when your body's sore, just doing gentle movement is a way to kind of activate our joints and so forth. So drinking water. If you like your sugary drinks, no worries, but just maybe be mindful of them or make them more like intermittent. But water throughout the day, by the time you're thirsty, you're already dehydrated and your brain is working at a good 10% less than what it could be if you were properly hydrated. And we get busy. So you can set your phone and think, okay, oh, that's my water thing. Every hour I'm going to have half a glass of water or a glass of water. Getting a massage, just going outside in the sun, being out in nature is very important for our brain. We lost touch with that for a variety of reasons. I think in this area, it's still very alive and well, but maybe in some of the more urban areas, and people forget. It's like, oh, it's crummy out. I'm not going to go out. Go out and feel that rain on your face. Go mm-hmm. let that north wind just burn you for a few minutes, because it's invigorating. And we haven't evolved so far. We need nature. And a lack of nature, lack of green, is a precipitator. It can cause or exasperate depression. And there's things that prove that now. Mm-hmm. So whatever you enjoy movement-wise, and again, the more you get out. And then bedtime rituals, making sure you're getting enough sleep. People that are short on sleep, say like you're getting 5 hours of sleep, their timing and their thought process is about like somebody who's had a couple alcoholic drinks. So that's very interesting. And I'm not a good sleeper. I have some issues with that. So it's something I have to practice. Bedtime rituals, turning your screen off. Very hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that blue light does activate our brain, making your room quiet and dark and cool enough. Using your room only for sleeping. I'm a notorious bedtime reader, but I make sure it's paper. I even put my Kindle away. And then social self-care. I'm an introvert. I can spend a lot of time alone, but when I get depressed, I isolate, and there's a difference. So again, the types of relationships. Is this somebody that's very draining and toxic in your life? You have to reflect on that. You know, is this? So sometimes we have some high energy people in our lives, and I love them. But I know that when I'm spending time with them, I'm not going to be as well fed. But I enjoy them. and, mm-hmm. and I treasure them, and I feel good in my interaction with them, and that's okay. That is different than when I'm interacting with somebody and I'm mostly feeling sad and down after that interaction, judged and condemned, and those negative things. So you can, reflecting on that, asking for help, easy to talk about, hard to do. And especially if you're in a service profession, we serve. We don't ask for help. Well, that's ridiculous. And culturally, for me, very stoic. You don't ask for help. You don't tell people your problems. You just tough it out. Mm-hmm. So that's not healthy. We're social beings. We need each other. And asking for help and knowing it's going to be a circle. I'm going to be there for you, and you're there for me, and that's what friendship and true connectivity is. So calling a trusted friend, and again, noticing who's in your life for what reason. We have different relationships for different people. So like somebody might just be hilarious. They're a great storyteller. Every time I'm with that person, I just laugh, and it's wonderful, and I feel great. But because she's such a great storyteller, I can't really go deep in my heart and tell her because she'll probably share it. Mm-hmm. And so I have to be careful. Like, so we can go and have a good laugh and stay on the surface, and that's rewarding. But when I need to go deep, or maybe there's other people in my life, like I could actually ask them, can you help me get through till I can get my paycheck? I need a little help with rent this month. I'll get back to you on that. And then do get back to. Mm-hmm. So being very conscious of who you're choosing to spend time with and why you're spending time with them. And then joining groups that interest you. So it could be a support group, but it could just be a fun activity. There's different activities in Bethel. Taking that road trip you always talked about, mm-hmm. those things, you say you're going to do it. I'm going to go hike somewhere on the road system. And every time you go in, you run around, you don't do that. Well, make a point, make it happen, and do it with somebody. So then you can develop those memories. And then another area is spirituality, which can be religious, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. Spirituality is a quiet, reflective time. It can be meditation. It can be prayer. It can be breathing. Doing something for someone else. So being volunteering in places can be a form of spirituality. Helping neighbors, like there's elders that live around me, and whenever we hunt or fish, we always bring to them. It's prepared, and we bring it to them. And that's just something we enjoy doing, and it feels good. And it's part of our spiritual well-being, kindness to others. So those are just sort of some areas of self-care.
Would you say that trying to understand what the universe was created for is a form of spirituality?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And those are great conversations with people. And, mm-hmm. and I enjoy talking to people that have very different, I know they have a very different view than I do, mm-hmm. because it challenges me. And so, like, of course I go with like-minded people, and we have these wonderful deep conversations about the meaning of life or the meaning of air and water and how I exist in the world and what's my ripple effect and all those wonderful questions. But it's also good to get with somebody with a polarized view. Not that you have to agree with them, and not even that you need to argue. You just, it keeps that curiosity.
It's another perspective on the mm-hmm. subject, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think it's important to hold judgment, mm-hmm. quick to judge. That's not what I think. That's wrong. And that is, that's the opposite of what we're going for. So, right, it broadens your lens. Mm-hmm. Often they pose a perspective I never thought about. I didn't have that part of my brain challenged. And it's like, I hadn't thought of that. I'll have to sit with that for a little while.
I know. Mm-hmm. Bringing that up reminds me of constructive criticism, how some people kind of take it as a negative aspect when they have the criticism towards them. Mm-hmm. It's not really negative, though. I feel when somebody gives constructive criticism, kind of like how with me playing music, someone listening to me and telling me like, oh, that was nice, but you were really bad at this part. Well, that, yes, I was bad at that part, but mm-hmm. that was because I didn't really practice that part. So that was constructive criticism, but it wasn't negative. It was something that, if I took that information, I can filter it and then go back to that portion and realize, oh, that wasn't right because of him telling me I know it's not right now, but it felt right before. Mm-hmm. So
right.
would that be like a I want to say a good depiction?
Oh, it's a great depiction in that you were proceeding with your musical you know, presentation, and the person heard it differently than you. So it, what it allows you to do is expand and think about that. Oh, well, I was doing improv and the sound I was going for, and maybe not, you know, and then you can explore that, think about it. So when somebody offers you a point of view, sitting with it and feeling it in your body is really important, because if I flare and get kind of pushing back on it, that's another question.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? Why am I getting so mad? That's just their opinion. That's their thought. It's not right or wrong. It just is. So can I go back to that inside and be more gentle and explore it with curiosity? Or if I'm flaring and getting defensive, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
That might be triggering something from my past that I hadn't thought about in a while. And I probably need to if I'm getting mad because somebody
mm-hmm.
expressed an opinion.
mm-hmm.
That what you were...
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I wanted to talk about was identity of self, I guess. Because I know especially on, like there's, I guess I would call it a culture of people on social media that, you know, before they were introduced to the social media, or at least like really dove into it, that they were very sociable. You know, they would talk to people around them, but then over time, social media kind of stuck into their personality, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what I like to think is you consist of everything you learn. You know,
mm-hmm.
everything you take in, everything you watch. So you watch nothing but social media. That's all you're learning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess where I'm going with this is within yourself, trying to identify within a social media version of yourself, where this is what people think of you in your community, to your actual self, not on social media.
Mm-hmm.
I've started to notice that in between those two kind of, I want to say, ping back and forth
mm-hmm.
As equal. But my question is, are they equal?
Mm.
You know, within your social media self and your actual self?
Right.
Because then I feel a lot of confliction comes within the social media yourself trying to be within your, you know, off of social media self, that some of the things people want you to do in order for them to like you, you know, the social media side of you wants them to like you.
Mm-hmm.
So in that term, you kind of do stuff that you don't want to do, but in order for them to like you, you do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I want to say, is there like a confliction in between there where when someone realizes that they're doing that for someone, but they don't want to be doing that,
mm-hmm.
Would that confliction be like the question to, like, I want to say coming to who am I or who I want to be within growing old and whatnot?
Right. Yeah, social media it's a very interesting phenomenon in that it is here and it's deep within our culture in a very rapid period of time. We haven't evolved to really fit it in. What they do know is there are higher rates of anxiety and depression among young adults who use social media. And some of that is, just as you said, the whole culture is about getting likes, getting noticed. So to get those likes and to get noticed, you have to perform in a certain way. It's sort of like peer pressure,
mm-hmm.
okay? So if your peer pressure is in a positive way and it's meeting your personal values, like, for example, you can get on a social media group that does things related to climate change and that fits in your value system. And so you perform in that group. It's still peer pressure, but it fits in your heart and soul. Or are you doing things on social media that conflict within yourself? And that can create the anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And people it seems like that's the quest of the social media. I'm putting something out there. I want it to be liked. I want it to be noticed. Sometimes we're doing it to be adversarial, but you still want to be noticed. That's mm-hmm. the whole essence of it. And then if it's not noticed, it can create this anxiety. So I think it is. It can create, much like peer pressure, it can create a conflict of who am I and how do I want to behave? And is this a group that I value their opinion of me and why? And does it fit in my normative belief system?
I want to, I feel like along that with social media identity and real life identity, that it was, I think, the third stage of healing, redefining yourself. I notice sometimes around me, like this is just from personal experience, going to Anchorage, traveling around, playing music, that I've seen people that, you know, it's something that they thought they would do for the rest of their life. It was influenced by a lot of people, you know, a lot of people really liked it, and they were so sure about it that that was what they were going to do. But down the line, they came to a confliction of, well, am I really doing this for myself? Mm-hmm. Or am I doing this for others to like it? Mm-hmm. And I guess where I'm trying to get at is that, would that really consist with the stage three of redefining yourself? Realizing that the social media you isn't what you want to be, mm-hmm. that you kind of just have to self-reflection to find out what you want compared to what people around you
right.
tell you what you want.
So I'm not sure about stage three.
Yeah.
But self-identity is an ongoing process. And so what you want in high school and what you want in your young adult life and what you want in your older years or even middle life can change. Your values can shift. The core values stay with you. So there's certain things that are a must in a relationship. And so, for example, when I was a young adult, I was very career-minded. I was about getting higher education, more credentialing, getting work experiences, very driven by my career. I even, like, my 5-year plan was career-related, okay? Mm-hmm. Then in middle life, I have children. I added children to my life, and my children and my family have become greater value, and I'm driven more by that. My career is my career. I still value it. So there's a core, but it's not the higher priority right now. Right now, it's about my kids and my extended family and being around them. So that identity shifts with time. I do think sometimes we run down a path, and I'll give an example. I started college thinking I wanted to be a nurse. I think I was told I wanted to be a nurse, but I believed I wanted to be a nurse, and I pursued that, and I was doing clinical work in a hospital, and I realized it's not at all what I want to do. I was a nurse's aide as well, and what I wanted to do was be with the people and do more social programming and what was really more social work related. So senior year rolls around, and I switch degrees, which was not accepted by my family very well, because how are you going to make any money as a social worker? Plus, I had to go to extra school, which I was paying for, but, you know, that was another expense. But I really had to battle with that. So then later in life, I was had the opportunity to work with public health nurses. And I thought, you know, had I done my clinical with public health nurses, I probably would have stayed with nursing. But I was given this lens of hospital nursing. Very valuable field, highly respected. It just wasn't for me. So it was this, it was quite a bit of turmoil, both financially and then sort of my identity. Who am I? And it was a shift. So it was still, the career thing was still important, but the shift in what direction I took it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, constantly that reflection. That's why the rituals around self-care and reflection are super important. So we can stay in tune with that. Sometimes we clash. We get at a point where we're clashing with ourselves. We're clashing with where we're at in life. And people think of that as like a bad thing. I think it can be a catalyst for change. When things become uncomfortable, we need to do something to get back into our equilibrium. So are we going to go back to what we know? Because it's what I know. Or is because where I'm at not comfortable, maybe I need to shift. And then it gets scary and uncomfortable again, but it's good. It's a catalyst.
I guess now what we can finish on would be, I do want to touch on the topic of balance. The yin and yang, because I know for a fact that in order for anybody to grow, they have to understand that the negative comes alongside of the positive. That though you can have positive, there's always going to be an opposite side of it, and that you have to deal with both. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is the importance of balance in self-care and you know, within just growing older in life and gaining more experience. What would you say within balance would be a good thing to take away from that?
So imbalance usually creates discomfort. And I think that is the challenging part of self-care, that sometimes we need to sit with the discomfort. It could be loneliness. It could be a confusion. And if we keep running to what we know because it's comfortable, we don't challenge ourselves. So in our quiet, we have to sit with the discomfort and own it. I'm feeling really lonely right now. What the heck is going on? I have people in my life, but somehow I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling connected. What's going on? And to sit with it. Is it that your alliance with them has shifted, where maybe you've outgrown each other? They're not bad. They're just maybe not for you anymore. Or is there something inside me that's stirred up? It doesn't mean I have to cut these people out. It just means I need to do some more internal work. So I think, again, like I was referring just recently, is imbalance, discomfort, is instead of fearing it and trying to put it away and stuff it down, we need to kind of open it up and unpackage it and really look at it. So that is a way, and sometimes coaches or outside people can help us with that, where we're unpackaging all our stuff and really looking at it and owning it and saying, what do you want to take back in? And that doesn't mean, oh, I'm uncomfortable with that, I'm leaving it. That's like, I'm uncomfortable with that, and why? And is that a challenge, or have I outgrown that? I don't know, so I got to sit with that. And then I may say, oh, that's my challenge. There it is. It's really uncomfortable because I wanted to make this change, and I kind of forgot about it, and now I've unpackaged it with this more objective person or you know, soulmate friend. And then I can say, okay, I don't want that whole thing back here, but I'm going to take some of that so I can learn. And that's part of that reflection. So imbalance, I think, is a wonderful opportunity to stay curious and go, I'm feeling kind of cruddy right now. What the heck's going on? You know, and it doesn't mean we need an answer today, but just sit with that. Then don't just sit and stew and stay sad. You know, okay, I'm going to spend about 20 minutes with this feeling, and I'm going to do some writing and some thinking about it, and then I'm going to put it away. And I'm going to go have tea, or I'm going to go for a run, or I'm going to do some self-care that brings me up. So we don't slip into this glum chum world.
That reminds me of, in correlation with the both positive and negative, that there was a baseline that always came back to when you were either feeling too positive or too negative. And I feel that's the important part of balance that people don't recognize, I want to say, is that there is a balance point in between the positive and negative, that, you know, you can be too positive and then that'll have an effect, and you can also be too negative and that'll have an effect, but it always comes back to shifting in that balance.
Right.
And I guess that's what I was trying to get to, was that even though within imbalance, I want to say that's realizing that there is an imbalance is kind of an invitation to get back on track with balance.
So I think it's Dan Siegel, but there's a expression called a window of tolerance. And I think that is exactly what you're describing, is, you know, there's highs and lows throughout the day, throughout a week. But the extreme highs and the extreme lows are forms of imbalance and what's going on there. And then to kind of think of a visual that's really helped me is life is like sand. Okay, so the wind is blowing and the sand looks this way and it's in this shape and I'm hanging out over here. And then life happens and the wind blows and it shifts over to another spot. So am I going to fight that or am I going to just kind of move with it? And know that even if I'm on like this really not very good side of the sand and I'm feeling uncomfortable, that's going to change. Whether I do something or not, it's going to change. So whether I'm on a high or a low, it's going to shift, and that's okay. What the self-reflection does is it allows you to own stuff and feel more, you know, do some self-regulating so you're more comfortable with it, and then ask the question, is there any action I could, should be doing right now, or am I just going to ride this one out? Mm-hmm. We don't need to take every battle or every shift in our life as, you know, charge. We can kind of just hang on for the ride,
mm-hmm.
and let it be, see what happens. That's that curiosity.
Yeah. I really like the saying that when you try to force something, usually you create more friction trying to do so. Like, say you're trying to be happy, but why? You know, mm-hmm. you can't force it. You have to understand and come to an acceptance of why you want to be happy. And that, you know, forcing, I want to say, just look at the form of water where, or even the form of how sound works, how when you give any kind of energy, any kind of contact, it reverberates to one side. And if there's a structure on the other side, it reverberates back and goes back to the source. Traveling, always reflecting off of things. And I want to say that's kind of similar to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that analogy too.
Well, talked about a lot.
Yeah, we did. Thanks for listening and appreciate that, the opportunity to just sort of chat.
All right.
So mentioned in the talk with Shelley was a study by Dr. Dan Siegel suggesting there is an important balance point in your mind and body that goes back to over time. You can reach this article at www.drdansiegel.com. That is DrDanSiegel.com. And go to the Healthy Minds tab to access the article, which is promoting lifestyles for a healthy mind and body. I'm going to give you a little overview of the work given and then several different ways of a healthy practice for a healthy lifestyle. David Rock, a leader in the organizational consulting world, and Daniel Siegel, got together and created what they're calling the Healthy Mind Platter. Here's how they describe the elements of this plan for a healthy mind. The Healthy Mind Platter has 7 daily essential mental activities necessary for optimum mental health. These 7 daily activities make up the full set of mental nutrients that your brain and relationships need to function at their best. By engaging every day in each of these servings, you promote integration in your life and enable your brain to coordinate and balance its activities. These essential mental activities strengthen your brain's internal connections and your connections with other people and the world around you. They are not suggesting specific amounts of time for this recipe for a healthy mind, as each individual is different, and our needs do change over time. The point is to become aware of the full spectrum of essential mental activities, and as with essential nutrients, make sure that at least every day you are bringing the right ingredients into your mental diet, even if it's just for a bit of time. Just as you wouldn't eat only pizza every day for days on end. We shouldn't just live on focus time alone with little time for sleep. The key is balancing the day with each of these essential mental activities. Mental wellness is all about reinforcing our connections with others and the world around us. And it is also about strengthening the connections within the brain itself. When we vary the focus of attention with this spectrum of mental activities, we give the brain a lot of opportunities to develop in different ways. One way to use the platter idea is to map out an average day and see what amounts of time you spend in each essential mental activities. Like a balanced diet, there are many combinations that can work well. In short, it is important to eat well, and the two applaud the new healthy eating plate. As a society, we are sorely lacking in good information about what it takes to have a healthy mind. Since the mind is both embodied and embedded in our connections with others and our environment, both naturally and culturally, these seven essential times help strengthen our internal and relational connections. And since the brain is continually changing in response to how we focus attention, we can use our awareness in ways that involve the body and our connections to create a healthy mind across the lifespan. They hope that the healthy mind platter creates an appetite for increasing awareness on how to nourish our mental well-being each day. The Healthy Mind Platter was created by Dr. Daniel J. Siegel, Executive Director of the Mindset Institute and Clinical Professor at the UCLA School of Medicine, in collaboration with Dr. David Rock, Executive Director of the Neuro Leadership Institute. And here are the seven different activities explained. 1. Focus time. When we closely focus on tasks in the goal-oriented way, we take on challenges that make deep connections in the brain. And 2, playtime. We allow ourselves to be spontaneous or creative, playfully enjoying novel experiences. We help make new connections in the brain. 3, connecting time. When we connect with other people, ideally in person, and when we take time to appreciate our connections to the natural world around us, we activate and reinforce the brain's relational circuitry. 4. Physical time. When we move our bodies aerobically, if medically possible, we strengthen the brain in many ways. 5. Time in. When we quietly reflect internally, focusing on sensations, images, feelings, and thoughts, we help to better integrate the brain. 6. Downtime. When we are non-focused, without a specific goal, and let our minds wander or simply relax, we help the brain recharge. And finally, 7. Sleep time. When we give the brain the rest it needs, we consolidate learning and recover from the experiences of the day. Well, that's all. Thank you for listening. And if you have any questions about anything discussed or are seeking any services regarding DV or SA, please do reach out to us at any of our given contact numbers. Our 24-hour crisis line, 907-543-3456. Again, 24-hour crisis line, 907-543-3456. Our toll-free number, 1-800-478-7799. Again, toll-free, 1-800-478-7799. Our Bethel local business line, 907-543-3444. Again, Bethel Local Business Line, 907-543-3444. And just to recap on the announcements, I'll give them again. Through the City of Bethel CARES money, which was passed through to BCSF, which was passed through to TWC, TWC is offering individual assistance for those who have experienced financial difficulty because of COVID-19. This might be because you had to quarantine after exposure and couldn't work from home, or if you were furloughed from your workplace. If you think you qualify, please go to TWC's website, www.tundrapeace.org. Again, that is tundrapeace.org. And go to the COVID-19 grants tab to either fill in an application online or print, fill out, and send to TWC. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. This year, due to the pandemic, we will be doing most of our activities digitally and online to be as safe as possible and inclusive as possible. Make sure to like TWC's Facebook page, Tundra Women's Coalition. There will be a $1 a bag of stuff at TWC's thrift store on Saturday, October 3rd, from 10 to 4. It will be a sidewalk sale if the weather permits. If weather does not permit, it'll be indoors, so please bring a mask and attempt to socially distance. We will again host the Facebook Purple Gusbuck campaign. This campaign raises awareness for the important issues by showing that you are willing to join hands with others across Bethel, the state of Alaska, and the globe to eradicate domestic violence from our world. Purple signifies domestic violence awareness, and gusbucks are a traditional clothing item worn by Yupik people in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. If you have a purple gusbuck and would like to show your support for domestic violence awareness, please find a good background that represents something beautiful or life-giving to you, and take a photo of yourself wearing your gusbuck with your hands outstretched to symbolize joining hands with all the other people who are working to bring an end to domestic violence in our region and our world. Please submit the photos to us at twc@twcpeace.org. Again, that is twc@twcpeace.org, or our Facebook page, and we will post a new photo each day during the month of October. As well, TWC will be doing a Facebook page with several peer-to-peer fundraising campaigns, so we can continue to perform our life-saving services. TWC staff will as well distribute DVAM resources, domestic violence awareness resources, bags. For the first week of October, we will as well be doing a Snapchat filter. It'll be available for the community, so go ahead and also check that out. There will be media messages from TWC's board and TWC's Teens Acting Against Violence, also known as TAB. If you want any more information or are seeking any services, you can reach us at any of our given contact numbers. And again, thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Wellness Wednesdays on KYUK, a show about the health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Catch us every Wednesday at 10 a.m.